Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Jason Lipschutz, and I'm an associate editor and the Pop Shop blog editor of Billboard.com. Based in New York on the other line in Los Angeles is the guinea pig to my hamster, Keith Caulfield. How's it going, Keith?
I'm good. I don't know what that means.
Guinea pig to my hamster? It's just two rodents, you know.
Oh, just two rodents trying to make their way through life.
Did you ever own a guinea pig or a hamster?
I had a rat.
You had a rat?
Yeah, I had a rat. Yeah, I had a rat.
How was that?
How was your rat? How was the rat and the rat in the hat? He was fine.
Keith, welcome to the Pop Shop Podcast. We have a ton to talk about, as always. We will be talking about Hot 100 Fest. It was this weekend. It was awesome on Jones Beach in New York. Had a great time. Talked to some very cool people and saw some great stuff, including Justin Bieber's long way to come back. We will be previewing the MTV Video Music Awards, which are this weekend. We will be talking about the Hot 100, some soon-to-be hits, and we will... I'm excited about this one, man. We have an interview with the one and only Troy Sivan. Troy Sivan stopped by the Pop Shop Podcast to talk about his new mini-album, Wild, which is due out September 4th, and... showed us some new videos, talked about some new music, and just was a really great guy, and excited to have that on the Pop Shop Podcast.
I love me some Troye Sivan.
Yeah, he was awesome, man. He was very cool. New music sounds really, really, really great. So excited to get to that. As always, a little bit of housekeeping before we move on. If you like the Pop Shop Podcast, subscribe to the show in iTunes so you never, ever miss an episode. Give us a rating or review. And, or maybe both, who knows, in iTunes, helps our stats, makes us very happy. If you have any questions for Keith or myself, hit us up on Twitter. He is at Keith_Caulfield. I am at Jason Lipschutz. And if you want to explore all of the Billboard podcast universe, go to itunes.com/billboardpodcasts. That's plural. Keith, are you ready to rock and roll?
Let's go.
Let's go indeed. All right, so
let's rock and roll.
Now, you were not at Hot 100 Fest. We missed you out there, man.
Who knows? Maybe I was there. You just didn't see me.
I mean, I could have
been there, just not working.
I guess that's true.
I could have been hanging out and been like, I ain't going to work. I just want to see the show.
Could have been in the middle of the Fetty Wap crowd.
I could have been at the Samsung stage.
Yeah.
At the Hot 100 stage. Actually, no. I was not there.
Well, you missed an awesome, awesome weekend. Thank you to everyone who came out during Hot 100 Fest. It was such a great time. And as I was tweeting a couple times, that if you saw me and shouted Pop Shop Podcast, I would give
you
a free
soda.
How'd that turn out? Somebody did it, but it was the one time of the weekend that I didn't have a soda. And it's a shame. And the problem is also that I was backstage a lot. I planned this very poorly. I was backstage a lot doing like interviews and stuff. So I would tweet like, hey, if you see me, but then I would just be like not walking
not
around.
Seeable, basically. Yeah. If you see just, me, I'm backstage for
these
the next
are basically
five hours.
Just excuses as to why I didn't hand out tons of free sodas. But to the dude that that said Pop Shop Podcast and did not get a free soda, I owe you a soda, man. Find me.
You suck.
I do suck. No, seriously. Jeez. There's just this feeling of guilt like pervading everything I do now because I didn't give that dude a free soda. Anyway, Justin Bieber closed out Hot 100 Fest with a 7-song performance, which I really enjoyed, and I think a lot of people really enjoyed. It was billed as a special performance, so it wasn't a full set, but it was actually more than I thought we were going to get. He did, like I said, 7 songs.
How long was he actually on stage for?
Probably about half an hour, maybe a little more.
So about as long as Nicki Minaj.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Nicki's set was cut short because she was running late and there were some technical problems.
Yeah, which was a bummer. But
everyone said that she was amazing, but back to Justin Bieber, sorry.
So Justin Bieber, he played 3 songs. It was basically like... his performance was in 3 segments. The first segment was the regular choreography that we've seen from the arena shows. He did Boyfriend, Beauty and a Beat, and As Long as You Love Me. And then, you know, then with a total stage setup that he would have at an arena show. And then after that, he did 3 songs acoustic. It was just him on a stool and an accompanying guitarist. And he did actually some Journals jams. He did All That Matters. He did Hold Tight. And he also threw in Be All Right. And I really enjoyed it. It was kind of like mature Bieber, I guess. And then
a little mature Bieber in their life.
Of course. He's all grown up. And then after that, he did Where Are You Now? Skrillex came out. Skrillex performed right before Justin Bieber. Skrillex came out to help him out. They danced on stage. Justin Bieber took his shirt off, and they did the whip.
Wild.
They did the whip and the nay nay dance.
Skrillex did with Bieber.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun, and then there were fireworks at the end. He did not play or tease his new single "What Do You Mean," which comes out this Friday.
Well, that would have screwed up the countdown because the countdown isn't over yet. He's doing a daily countdown towards the release of his new single, which is coming in a few days.
I was hoping he'd play like a verse. Like, wouldn't that have been cool? Like,
well, yeah.
Just play like one verse. I was hoping.
You kind of probably think he has something else up his sleeve for the actual reveal of the song. Like,
yeah, you got it. You got to figure. Keith, I don't know if I told you this, but I heard last week. I heard "What Do You Mean?" I teased it a little tiny bit on Twitter, and
what do you mean? You heard some of "What Do You Mean?"
What do you mean?
What do you mean? Who's on first? Ayo.
All I will say about this song is it absolutely lives up to expectations. Like, for those who have been kind of bombarded with this 30-day countdown, it's like, all right, let's just get to it. I will say that it's worth it. So
well, there's all I'm thinking now is Fifth Harmony. Worth it. I don't think there's any way possible that this song is going to live up to a 30-day celebrity hype filled countdown. Unfortunately, there's no way he's going to win here. It will be interesting to see and hear what this sounds like.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And he's in the middle of just
how
this
can you totally agree? You just said it lives up to the hype. And you can't agree with me because I said it can't live up to the hype.
No, I'm saying that I totally agree that it's a little bit of overkill, but I still think that it's going to be worth it. And give it to me, I'm worth it. That's what I'm going to say. No, I totally agree in the sense that, you know, I'm not a big like social media like huge campaign guy. It's a little bit tiring more than anything. I know people love it and his fans are going crazy, but it's just so much for one song. And this doesn't go for Bieber. This goes for every artist. Like I didn't love like the Bad Blood countdown to that music video. It's like, all right.
Well, I kind of loved Stokes. It because it made more people watch the Billboard Music Awards.
Yeah. So. Stokes anticipation. Well, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway,
if it works out, then we love it. Hey,
I do think the single lives up to the hype though. That's what I'm saying.
All right.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I'm sorry to dwell so long on Justin Bieber, this one isolated performer in a two-day Hot 100 festival.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, so just a couple other highlights I have written down. Fetty Wap drew an enormous crowd on Sunday afternoon. He actually was not on the main stage, which I feel like was probably a poor decision from someone's part, just because he's had such an enormous
three hit singles right now.
Yeah, we'll get to him on the Hot 100 in the top 10 in a second, but people were just there for him playing, you know, all of his hits now, 6-7-9 and My Way, and of course Track Queen. So he was definitely one of the highlights. The Weeknd, I think The Weeknd, who headlined on Saturday night, was pound for pound the best performer of the entire weekend. Just it, for anyone who doubted The Weeknd as a festival headliner, like all you have to do is see him live now, and he is just. He goes from Earned It to Can't Feel My Face to The Hills, and you're just like, holy crap. Like, these are huge songs, and he delivers them so expertly. It was very cool to see. Some of the other highlights. Jason Derulo was, like, sneaky amazing on Saturday. Like, I think a lot of people were surprised. He was, like, the pleasant surprise of the entire festival. And everyone kind of knows Jason Derulo. Everyone knows his hits, but choreography, the interaction with the crowd, the kind of stunts he has. He recorded like a everything is for 4 days to Justin Bieber's new single, because we can't escape Justin Bieber's new single. He was really mesmerizing. It was awesome. And then the last one, I got to shout out Little Mix, who performed early on Saturday. Only girl group there at Hot 100 Fest, and they made the most of it. They were really dynamic on stage. Love their new song, Black Magic, which we've talked about on the Pop Shop podcast. Keith, if you or anyone else wants to check out all of the Hot 100 Fest coverage, go to billboard.com. We have photos, we have videos, we have interviews. We have a ton of stuff going on, and I had a blast. Do you have any lingering Hot 100 Fest questions, Keith?
How was the crowd? I was reading something about how it was like there was a huge crowd on Saturday. Was the crowd... someone told me that the crowd was actually bigger on Sunday.
Yeah, crowd was definitely bigger on Sunday. At least they showed up earlier on Sunday, because I think that was due to the fact that Fetty Wap performed on Sunday at 3 p.m.
Mm.
So if you wanted to see Fetty Wap, you were there early, and then you just kind of stayed for the Nicki Minaj and Skrillex and Justin Bieber. Not to say that people showed up late on Saturday, but I do think there was kind of... I think Lil Wayne performed around like 7:30. It also went an hour later on Saturday too. So...
Wow.
I think that there was definitely a concerted effort to get there all day Sunday for the entire show, and it was just mobbed. It was a mob scene, and everyone was having a great time. I mean, all the feedback I've seen from the festival, like a lot of congratulations, a lot of good spirits. So we're really happy here in Billboard land.
Mm, all right.
All right, man. So from a Billboard event to an MTV event, this Sunday, the 30th of August, is the MTV Video Music Awards, and Keith, you're going to be there, right?
I will be. Yeah, I'll be there on the red carpet. I'm not actually seeing the show, but I'll be on the red carpet before the show. But we will have a reporter backstage in the press room. So we're technically Billboard will be there, and we'll also have someone in the audience too. But me personally, no. I'm just doing the boring old red carpet, you know.
Oh, you
the celebrity
like,
filled red carpet.
Yeah, exactly. You will you'll be talking to some of the biggest stars in music.
Well,
and
that's the hope.
No, that hey man.
Let's not get people a little bit too riled up over this.
I'm riling people up. I'm ready to rile people up.
The brief version of why I said that so sarcastically is that if you've seen how red carpets work, you know it really depends on where you're at on the carpet, and depending on where we're at, we'll get lots of people or we won't. So hey,
find out
next Monday when you'll see the videos on billboard.com.
Is this your first red carpet without me since...
first one without me, Keith?
No, since like when? Like the American Music Awards last year?
Because
Grammys and Billboard Music Awards.
Finally, I get to have the damn red carpet to myself again. Yep. This would be the first time I've done a red carpet without Jason since last year's American Music Awards.
I feel like... Are you going to like look around and be like... And feel like... A cold shiver and be like, where is he?
No, where I'll be like, Jason? Yeah, finally. I can not have to share this goddamn mic. finally, when Fifth Harmony walks by, I can actually talk to them again.
Who are you? Oh, you were so mad when I talked to J-Lo at the Billboard Music Awards.
For good Lord, it's Jennifer Lopez. Though she, honestly, was not very interested in talking to anyone. So
that's fair.
Just the fact that you got to talk to her for like
time.
22 seconds was pretty good.
Yeah, it was a busy time. So... Keith, Miley Cyrus is hosting the VMAs, which I'm really excited about.
That's almost all we know about the show.
Yeah, it's interesting how they've kept so much under wraps. It leaked out that The Weeknd is performing Can't Feel My Face. That leaked out because I think Tom Cruise said it on some sort of talk show.
Maybe the VMAs are just holding, because we're recording this on Monday, they have yet to announce anyone except for The Weeknd performing. I don't think they've announced any other presenters.
They're gonna announce it like...
Daily, starting probably today.
By the time people hear this podcast, I'm sure there were going to be have some announcements. I know that I think the rumor is that Taylor is going to do something with Wildest Dreams, her new single, either
well,
the
it's
video
not the rumor.
Or the
on the pre-show. She's premiering the video, so
oh,
it kind of
okay.
makes you
so
think she'll probably
okay.
sing the song on the show. But
yeah.
She hasn't been announced as a performer yet.
We'll see. Nick Jonas is also doing the pre-show, performing Levels, his new single for the first time. So that is fun. And Keith, let's—I mean, it's going to be a great night. Let's talk a little bit about VMAs. of years past, of day the VMAs of yore. Keith, what's your favorite VMAs performance?
Well, they tend to be Madonna performances.
Shockingly.
To be perfectly honest. I think Madonna doing Vogue in 1990 in full, like, Marie Antoinette drag, with all of her dancers from the Blonde Ambition tour and the Truth or Dare movie. And she was fully lip-syncing. Like, there wasn't even a microphone anywhere near anyone's face, which is just sort of brilliant. And then the year before, when she had Expressed Yourself, she opened the show in 1989, was awesome. Like, it was, you know, the full-on light-up stairs when her feet touched them, a la Billie Jean, Michael Jackson. She did some voguing, and everyone was just like, what did she just do? Because Vogue hadn't come out, and only, you know, unless you were really hip, you didn't know what she was doing. So yeah, those are two of my favorites. But then, you know, of course, the obvious ones, you know, Britney doing, you know, I'm a Slave for You with a snake, yeah, or the amazing, the NSYNC performance where they were behind, like, TV monitors. It was the Bye 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 performance.
Oh yeah, that was awesome.
That was awesome. You know, when Eminem had, like, a cavalcade of, like, Eminem lookalikes
Real Slim Shady. Shady, yeah.
I mean, there's no shortage of amazing VMA performances, and those are merely, like, 1% to 2% of the performances that have happened.
Yeah, yeah.
What about you, Jason?
Well, you know what, Keith? I feel like we've talked about this on the podcast before many months ago, but I have to bring it up again because it is my favorite award show performance of all time.
Oh.
Just don't be disappointed.
No. I don't know what it is. I really don't
2002,
know.
P. Diddy at the VMAs. Unbelievable show. He brought out Busta Rhymes, Ginuwine, Pharrell, and Usher. It was a medley of Bad Boy for Life, I Need a Girl, Past the Courvoisier, and it was just like, I don't know if you remember, Keith, but it had those people on like weird, like, pogo sticks, like, and it was just nuts. And I just remember, like, there was this little white dude dancer with Busta Rhymes, and I just love that performance so much. It just gets me so hyped every single time I watch it.
Wow.
Aside from that. Huh. I just love the VMAs. I remember when they were in New York, and this was a while ago, and I just, my favorite ones were, and I think it were a couple years, where Chris Rock hosted.
Chris Rock is, like, probably the best VMAs host. I mean,
so
it goes, I think it goes Chris Rock, then maybe Arsenio Hall.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's kind of like a crapshoot. But go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, I just remember, and I think it was at the Opera House in New York. Was it at the Met? I guess it was at the Met. Yeah,
well, yeah, the Metropolitan Opera House. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
They did it at least twice there in 1999 and I think 2001.
Yeah, and it was just so prestigious, which is a weird thing to say about the Video Music Awards, because that tries to be like the anti-prestige. But it really did feel like, just watching it, the telecast was just momentous. It was so much fun. And well, I will say also that 2 years ago, 2013, with the whole Miley Cyrus, Robin Thicke thing, and as well as the whole Justin Timberlake NSYNC reunion, that was all very, very cool.
Well, one of my I have actually, I think it's hard to sort of disassociate a particular memory or fondness of the VMAs or MTV without thinking of it in terms of how you as an individual, not necessarily just Jason, but anyone who's listening, thought of MTV at the time. So if you grew up in the 80s, you're going to have a more fond memory of, like, the 1987 VMAs when NXS cleaned up or something. But, you know, I watched the VMAs. Well, I've pretty much watched the VMAs every year since, like, 89. And I think that probably one of the greatest or most memorable VMAs was the 1999 VMAs, which was the first year that they were at the Metropolitan Opera House. And it was the 15th anniversary of the show. And it was one of those shows where they had... They were able to really have the staging of the Met really enhance the entire show. Like, Lauryn Hill performed a medley of songs, where she came out from the side of the stage. Her and her entire band yeah. came out on a moving platform. Then the beginning of the show, when Kid Rock and Run DMC and Aerosmith all teamed up for Ba Wa Da Ba and Walk This Way, and it was nuts because they came. It was nuts, and it was such a huge stage, so beautiful. And you also had sort of the early icons of MTV, who are still icons and continue to be icons, come on to the show and present awards or be presenters of stuff. So, you know, David Bowie was on the show, Janet Jackson was on the show, Madonna was on the show. It was this blend of the then and the previous and the icons and so forth. It was just a great sort of moment. And MTV has tons and tons of great moments, but I thought as a whole, that was probably one of the best shows in total.
Very cool, man. Well, I'm hoping we get some more amazing memories from the 2015 VMAs. And yeah, Keith, you'll be there. And if you are listening and you have some particular VMAs memories of your own, share them with us. We want to hear what you think.
Have you been to the VMAs, by the way? And I'll show.
I've never been to the VMAs. It's funny because they were in Brooklyn in 2013, the year I mentioned, and I was on vacation.
I've been to one VMA, like in terms of actually being in the audience. Mm-hmm. I've been to one, and that was the 1998 Video Music Awards. That was my first year at Billboard.
No way.
Yeah. And I sat in the very last row of the Universal Amphitheater. Then it became Gibson, and now it's been torn down. It's going to become Harry Potter Land at Universal Studios. Yeah. So, but the great thing about it was Madonna performed on the show. She opened the show, and that was the very first time I saw Madonna live.
Back
to Madonna.
Here's the thing. I want you to know that you said the great thing about it was, and I knew the next
where
word
this was
out of
going.
Your mouth was going to be Madonna.
Well, also, Marilyn Manson closed the show with The Dope Show, and that was pretty amazing.
Oh, I remember that. That was a great one.
And I got to go to the after party, which was at the Universal Studios backlot, and I vividly remember walking past Kurt Loder, who was with MTV News at the time, doing an interview with Rob Zombie, and I'm like standing behind Rob Zombie as I'm walking past them doing like a live like setup. It was crazy. Anyway.
Oh, man. Anyway, yeah. Keith, let's actually change it up before we get to the top of the Hot 100. I want to get to a few of the songs at the bottom of the Hot 100. They're not in the top 20. They're not in the top 40 yet, but they could be there soon enough. That's why we call this segment Soon to Be Hits. All right, man, we got two soon-to-be hits this week. Do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
I'll go first. So my song is actually not even on the Hot 100 yet, but okay. I felt compelled to speak about it. It is Audion, I could be pronouncing that wrong, featuring Lady Antebellum, the country group, yes, truly, yeah. A dance act with a country group with Something Better. The song actually goes top 10 on our dance club songs chart this week. And it's not one of those things where Lady Antebellum showed up on a remix later or Audion remixed a song by Lady Antebellum. It is a true collaboration. Evidently, Audion reached out to Lady Antebellum's reps and asked them if they would like to be on this song. And I've read stories where at first they're like, oh, huh? Why are we going to go there? And then they're like, no, let's just listen. And then they listened to it, and they really loved the song, and they said, sure, let's do it. And so now the song is actually getting some top 40 airplay. It's a hit on dance club floors, and it's actually a pretty cool song. I like it a lot. And so who knows if this could be sort of the next weird kind of country meets EDM collaboration, you know, top 40 hit, but who knows? There you go. Check it out. It is Something Better, Audion featuring Lady Antebellum.
Very cool, man, and cool story behind that song. Anyway, my soon-to-be hit this week is The Fix by Nelly of Nelly fame, featuring Jeremih. And this is, it debuts at number 85 on the Hot 100 this week, so it is on the Hot 100. This is Nelly's new single and his first Hot 100 hit since 2013. It's a song that is a little bit of a departure for him, if you are still thinking of Nelly as the hot and here, hot and her, country grammar, flappy wings kind of guy, but this is more in the vein of Just a Dream. It is a song that samples Sexual Healing by Marvin Gaye, and kind of relies on that Jeremiah hook in the same way that something like Somebody by Natalie LaRose does.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting little changeup for Nelly, and I think that this song could actually really connect. It is his 35th Hot 100 hit. That is a stat that Keith provided me before we started taping. Nelly and featuring Jeremiah and Audien featuring Lady A. These two songs are soon to be hits.
Lots of featureings this week.
So before we get to Troye Sivan, let's check in at the top of the Hot 100 where Omi, my man Omi, is still number one, man. I figured that once Can't Feel My Face hit number one, it was just going to be Can't Feel My Face nonstop, but this is the second straight week that Cheerleader is still number one.
Yeah, and, you know, it's actually fairly close at numbers one and two. So it appears that The Weeknd could be number one next week. They're both songs are actually, they lost overall points this week. But that doesn't mean that Silento, who is number three, is suddenly going to be number one. What could happen in 2 weeks' time? Sorry, I'm getting confused because the way we track our weeks now is different. Because the week that we're talking about now, like what's coming up, is for the Friday that we just finished going through this Thursday.
Yep.
So, unless Nick Jonas sells a million copies with his new single, I think the top of the Hot 100 is going to be pretty static. It's either going to be Omi or The Weeknd again at number one next week. But the week after that, we have to watch for Justin Bieber because his song will come out this Friday.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
Will certainly impact. And if they're gunning with this huge countdown, then we can probably imagine that they're probably gunning for number one, which means they'll probably drop the music video, the song, and the airplay, everything happening at the same time.
Well, we do know that there is a lyric video coming, and the music video they shot last week. Mm. So I would assume, and this is not any kind of intel, but I would assume the lyric video probably drops right around.
I would also assume that Justin Bieber probably performs on the VMAs.
Yeah, that's also a possibility.
I'm going to guess Justin Bieber, Taylor Swift, The Weeknd. Miley Cyrus probably performs and maybe drops a brand new single at the same time. Those are my guesses. We can probably have some more before the show's out.
we'll be talking about it all next week.
There's only one podcast this week. Only one podcast with me and you, and this is my chance to talk about it before the show is on.
I know, man. I hope Justin performs the new song. I was, like I said, I was hoping he performed it last night, but my dreams were
Madonna
dashed.
Performs.
Oh, yeah, do you?
I'll just shut up.
Let's do. What do you think she'll do? Some Rebel Heart deep cut.
She doesn't need to perform. It's all right. She's busy with her own tour coming up. It's all right.
That's
maybe
fair.
Janet Jackson drops out of the sky.
That would be cool. Yeah.
That would be cool. Performs, a No Sleep and, and a segue into a brand new dance song we haven't heard to pimp out the new tour that's coming up.
I'd like to, I'd like some Demi Lovato Cool for the Summer performance.
Demi Lovato and Selena Gomez together on stage. How about
that?
That'd
be cool. Speaking of Selena Gomez, Good For You, her new single featuring A$AP Rocky, it actually reaches a new peak this week at number 6. It debuted at number 9 a few months ago, and it's been hanging around in the top 20, now up to number 6. Also in the top 10, Fetty Wap. He can't leave that top 10, man. 679 is now in the top 10.
I love how the song is called 679 and the song is at number 8. 679 at 8. Anyway.
That was the most chartiest joke I've ever heard, and I love it so much.
That's all I got. It's like, I wrote an entire story a few months ago when Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly was number one.
Yeah.
And I wrote a story that basically just said, Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly is the first album with the word pimp in its title at number one.
Yeah, I remember that story. And you asked me what other albums have pimp in the title. I was like, I don't know.
Like Pimpalation?
I really don't know. So Keith, maybe going back to Selena Gomez, maybe Good For You moves up. I mean, it seems to have a lot of momentum moving forward. Maybe.
Yeah, but it's still like tens of thousands of points away from number one.
Okay.
So, I mean, and right now, I mean, like maybe One Direction's video that came out last Friday can help the song jump back into the top 10 next week. But right now, it's one of those things where it has to be a song that's going to drop out of the sky that could like suddenly threaten to be like a number one debut. So like if like Rihanna shows up on the VMAs, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's true, man.
Yeah.
So Keith, we got to get to Troy Sivan. Like I said at the top of the show, so his new mini album, Wild, is coming out on September 4th. There's a ton of interest internationally around Troy, and he stopped by the PopChat podcast to talk about his new trio of videos. I don't know if anything is going to come out
yet. There's a teaser that's already out.
The tease is already out, okay.
For what it's worth. I don't know if the full-length video has actually dropped yet, but I saw the teaser for it, I think, yesterday.
Yeah, just a really interesting concept behind what he's doing and the new music he's making. He puts a lot of thought into everything he does, and he's so excited about this new phase of his career. He talked about recording and what's to come of his new music and everything along with it. So here's Troye Sivan on the PopChat podcast. My happy little pill, take me away. Troye Sivan, thank you so much for stopping by.
No
Billboard's
worries.
Podcast here. So you have Wild coming out very soon.
Yep.
Congrats on that.
Thanks so much.
How excited are you? I love the teaser video that you put out, and it just seems like this is the moment you've been waiting for. How excited are you?
I am so excited. I feel like it's one less thing that the fans can like figure out by themselves. As I put stuff out, I'm like, good, I put it out on my own terms without you guys like sneakily figuring it out, because they're just so excited. So yeah, it's cool.
It must be so wild to, and excuse the pun, it must be so wild
yeah.
to have a fan base this rabid of just people who want to know every single little detail about what's going on. Do you enjoy that because you have that kind of attention, or is it sometimes frustrating just being like, guys, I need to do this and I need to like reveal this in my own way?
No, I mean, they're like respectful most of the time. Yeah. Like as in I put up like a password protected file, for example, the other day, and was thinking that it would take them like a couple of days, maybe weeks, to hack like this password and then get into this locked file, and they did it in 6 minutes with like no hints. So I was just like, okay, cool. But I mean, I'm just grateful that they care enough, like, you know, to even try. So
I feel like you must feel like a super villain sometime, like they won't find out this path, like, oh, they cracked my code.
No, I definitely like sit at my phone like cackling it when I'm teasing them, like when I'm ahead of them and I know what's going on and they don't. I love it's like my favorite thing in the whole world.
It's unbelievable. So let's talk about Wild, this new project that follows TRXYE.
Mm-hmm.
And coming off of that, which was really successful, number one in a bunch of countries, mm-hmm. top 10 debut on the Billboard 200, what did you want to do just in terms of your sound, in terms of your music? What direction did you want to take that EP and go into for this next project?
So I think the most important thing for me, just in general, in the whole, you know, in everything that I do, is songwriting. And so it's something that I'm fairly new to. TRXYE was my first time writing. And I'd been writing for maybe like 6 months or so when I put that out, kind of thing. And now I just feel like the writing is getting so much better. And that's like the most exciting thing to me. So I just wanted to make sure that I was, improving and feeling comfortable enough in my writing that I could, you know, kind of write a poppier song and still feel like it was authentically me, because, you know, I trusted myself and I trusted the process and I trusted the people that I was working with enough to make that happen, you know, whereas before I would have just been like, no, this is going too pop, I must whatever, you know what
yeah.
I mean? And I was so kind of paranoid about getting the sound that I wanted, whereas now I just kind of have a little bit more trust in my writing and the people that I'm working with to make sure that we'll, you know, we'll get it regardless. And so, yeah, it was just about having some fun and exploring things and writing a lot of really, really terrible songs and then writing a couple of really, really good ones, I think. And so, I think it's just, you know, it's been a year of a lot of writing sessions. And I think we've, you know, really, really come out with some amazing songs. So
I assume the process was just a lot longer than TRXYE.
Yeah, it was a year of straight writing. I mean, especially with this, you know, really kind of fluid release structure, I've been writing up until like a couple of weeks ago, not necessarily for Wild, but for, you know, just to write, basically.
Yeah.
And you know, we're just being very open-minded to this really fluid process.
Yeah. And the interesting thing to me is that you just played, for the listeners, Troy just played a bunch of music, and I was so impressed just because of how much you've grown. Now, I was impressed by TRXYE, and I'm like, who is this kid, and why does he sound like he's figured it all out?
Oh my God, so far from figured it out. I feel like I figured it out a little bit more now, but yeah. just back there. I can't even really like listen to it anymore, TRX.
Really?
Like, well, I can. I mean, it's just like, it's like watching videos of you when you were a kid doing something embarrassing. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like it's gotten so much better, and I feel like I'd like to think I've grown so much as a writer and artist and, you know, figured it out a little bit more.
Well, what are some things that you wanted to talk about with these songs?
You know, I write a lot autobiographically, almost 100% autobiographically. And yeah, I mean, the song's about, it's kind of this weird lifestyle that I'm living where there's a lot of kind of long distance relationships, whether that's like romantic relationships or friendships or family, you know, so there's a lot of that. And a lot of the album kind of takes place in this sort of, it takes place with the context of really, you know, missing the people that you love. And so, yeah, I definitely explored that. I explore a lot of kind of LA culture. I explore a lot of Australian culture and just a lot of firsts. This is my first album, and I'm experiencing a lot of other firsts in other areas of my life.
All right. So, yeah. I like that. Very coy. I like that.
Yeah.
How different is LA culture to Australian culture?
Like chalk and cheese.
Yeah?
Like the craziest difference. Yeah.
Like chalk and cheese. I've never heard that before.
Really? Maybe that's an Australian thing. Another example of how different they are. Yeah. No, just super. I mean, I come from a relatively big city. I mean, it's 2 million people, but I come from a community of like 8,000 people that we sort of exclusively, it was like the small Jewish community of Perth. And we kind of, I only really had kids from my school growing up, and my school was like 200 kids, so it felt very, very small town. And then coming to LA, it's just like such a culture shock.
I can't even.
And New York, I can't even, like, no offense, but I can't stay here for like more than 3 days. I have like my brain just fries.
Is it just too much? It's like,
it's
overload.
Way too much.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. It's kind of a lot here.
Yeah.
So you described the video to Wild, the title track, and it seems so powerful, and it seems like it touches upon kind of a loss of innocence. And I wanted to know what led you down that path. What made you think of this story in this way? Because I find it so fascinating.
I think the thing that drove me to this plot line is just kind of frustration in that every time I see a young LGBT person commit suicide, all I can think about is the lost potential and what could have happened if only a family member had been a little bit more supportive, or someone at school, you know, had been a little bit more supportive. And so that frustration and exploring kind of what could be when you're young and naive and innocent and have no idea of, you know, any sort of pressures from anyone else, versus what unfortunately often ends up happening, you know, once you realize that pressure. I wanted to explore both of those paths and just kind of tell that story. In my opinion, is a very, very frustrating one, but yeah, just tell that story.
Yeah, and it seems like you have such a relationship with your fans that this is a message that's going to help a lot of people.
Yeah, I hope so. I kind of want to target families a lot with this. I'm kind of hoping that this is going to end up on TV and like, I don't know, middle America or something like that, in somebody's house who isn't, you know, maybe as supportive, and the parents are going to see it or whatever and just think like, oh, okay, I have the power right now to shape how much of a big deal if one of my kids is, you know, gay or whatever. Like for my family, it's been a good thing. Like it literally has not changed a single thing. My life is infinitely better because of it. My family is closer because of it. And that same issue that, you know, me being gay could have, if I was born into some other family, it could have been the thing that completely, you know, altered my entire life. And so, just showing that to a family, I think, is something that's really important.
Yeah. Being less circumstantial and being more wholly accepting is a powerful message.
Exactly.
Well, Troy, I can't wait to hear more. I know Wild's out soon. You have new music coming.
Yep.
And the people are going crazy, man. Everybody, YouTube and Twitter and every social media. I feel like there must be like social media platforms going crazy about you that you don't even know exist yet.
Are people
on like Meerkat talking about?
I don't know. I haven't been on Meerkat yet.
I don't know.
I hope so. That'd be cool.
Well, cool, man. Thanks for stopping by.
No, yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
And can't wait to hear more. So once again, Troye Sivan is coming back September 4th is Wild, and after that he's going to have some new music, as he mentioned. So can't wait for that. And Keith, are you ready, my man?
Yes.
For your chart stat of the week.
Hey. Okay, so this week in 1988, on August 27th, 1988, George Michael hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 with Monkey. It was the fourth.
Just like how you, I just really like how you said the word monkey,
monkey
there.
Fourth number one single from his Faith album, following the title track, Father Figure, and One More Try. He actually had two more hits from this album. I Want Your Sex reached number two, and Kissing a Fool went to number five. But we're talking about Monkey. Monkey hit number one from support of a newly produced and recorded version of the song that was produced by Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. There's a great story behind this, and this mostly comes from Fred Bronson's number one hits book, full disclosure. But I mean, I knew about it. But anyway, the story is George Michael really liked what Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis had done on Janet Jackson's Control album. And he was trying to, I think, sort of emulate that when he recorded Monkey. But he, because of time deadlines, he couldn't actually get Monkey to sound the way he really wanted it to sound. And so then he basically called up Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. Was like, hey, if you were going to produce Monkey, you know, this is after the album had come out, if you were going to produce Monkey, what would you do? And so basically they just sort of redid the whole song, recut it, did new vocals, sort of reproduced the whole thing, and then decided to release that as the commercial single. So when they released it and when you heard it on the radio and saw it in the music video, the version you heard was the version produced by Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, not the album version. So I find that super fascinating that a song became a hit thanks to a remix. It wasn't the first time that it had been done. We've actually had a lot of instances where a song reached number one because of a remix. Like before that, for example, The Reflex by Duran Duran hit number one off the strength of a remix by Nile Rodgers. And then later we saw, you know, of course, huge number one hits from, you know, Tupac with California Love. Yep. The original version of California Love on the album version did not sound like the version that we saw in the video much later, which became the huge hit. And then, of course, other examples that are a little bit more obvious, like Katy Perry and Kanye West with E.T. You know, Kanye comes in and sings a verse or raps a verse. Not quite a remix, but still it kind of counts. But anyway, this week in 1988, George Michael got his fourth number one from the Faith album, thanks to a little help from Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, remixing Monkey.
You can say that about Taylor Swift and Kendrick Lamar, too, right?
Yeah, it's sort of, I mean, see, that's a little bit different. What I'm talking about, I mean, I know I mentioned it. What I'm talking about is how you sort of like, kind of like reworked a song sonically to make it sound different, like a sort of a proper, like full-on remix. Like yeah. Lana Del Rey and Cedric Gervais did Summertime Sadness, or yeah. When Los Del Rio and the Macarena, that was a remix, or Everything But the Girl with Missing, or Tom's Diner, you know, from Suzanne Vega. All those were remixes. The George Michael thing is super unique because it's not only a remix of the music, but he actually recorded new vocals. So it's like a brand new recording, but at the same time, it's kind of a remix.
It is interesting, yeah.
It's not a duck. But anyway, there you go. There's your
try. It's interesting when you have a song come out and then you make that decision like, yeah, you know what, I kind of want to try it a little differently this time. And actually go into the studio and figure some new stuff out.
Yep.
Keith, as always, thank you for your chart stat of the week. All right, man, that is going to do it for us at the Pop Shop Podcast. Thanks again to Troye Sivan for stopping by. Thanks again to everyone who made it out to Hot 100 Fest. And as we said, next week on the show, we will have a full Video Music Awards recap. Keith will give us some good stuff from the red carpet, I'm sure.
I hope.
I will give you some good stuff from watching on my couch. Yeah. I guess next week is probably our last podcast for a minute, man.
Well, we don't know. Don't say what we don't know yet.
We'll see. We'll see.
We're not going away. We're not retiring.
No, I'm 2 weeks I'm getting married, so I'm going to be gone but we'll figure something out.
So we're figuring out what we're doing while Jason's gone is basically what he's trying to tell you.
Yeah, exactly. Don't worry. Like, the Pop Shop podcast will still go on in my absence, or maybe I'll call in for my honeymoon and we'll talk about the charts then.
Your fiance will love that.
I'm sure. Keith, do you have any parting words?
I don't.
Let's go with some California love. Thanks for listening and take care.